We are almost certain that Impact is going to pick up what they proposed. So the idea is that we will come to maybe to the council meeting. Mark, I'll respond to your email on February 22nd to give an update. But later in the year, definitely when they have gotten going more, they can come back and present on what they're doing, what they're finding, any information that will be helpful. So we can plan multiple presentations to the full council. So that was just all that to say, lots is happening. We really, really want to continue working closely with you all, and that's why we're here today. We want to hear from you how that should look. Shelley's going to talk about what Facentic Consulting are doing and the materials that they're developing that's specifically for providers and for community members. And so, yeah, we just want to hear how we can work together over the next 5 years, how you want materials brought to you, how you want to give feedback, any recommendations for us from the previous year, open to all comments and all questions. So I'll maybe if you do you have any questions now? I don't know how you all do this. Do you ask questions after or now?
Yeah, we can open it up for questions. I'm happy to facilitate Q&A. Does anybody have questions for Hannah at this point? Feel free to speak up or chat it in the chat box.
So, thanks, Hannah. Trying to figure out how to articulate the problem. So, in the past, what's happened is people have kind of submitted things to this panel. We give them feedback, then they incorporate our feedback, but it's actually the pendulum swings too far the other direction. And then we don't really end up, we end up with not what we were looking for. So I'm trying to figure out, I guess I'm asking the other committee members as well. This is not unique to working with the DPH and having information presented so we can share it with full council. But our process is a little truncated sometimes. Am I being clear? People kind of, should I spend more, try to put more words behind what I'm trying to say, or do people understand the problem that I'm identifying?
Yeah, no, articulate it just a little bit more, please.
Thanks, Lee. So basically, someone comes in, they show us their presentation. We're like, oh, we need more data. And then they come to the full council, and 50% of the presentation is data. And so I've seen that happen multiple times with regards to our interacting with presenters. And I'm just not, and then often presenters, give us the information the day before. That's a different particular problem. And so asking for people to kind of submit something 30 days before they're going to present it is not realistic either. But I guess the question is being asked to us as a body, how do we want information brought to us, right, Hannah, so we can actually mull it over and then make recommendations on how to share it out with the full council. Is that right?
Yeah.
I mean, maybe we can't solve it at this particular moment, but just to identify that and what is our feedback loop with regards to getting presenters' information back and then us seeing it again before it actually is presented.
So just for clarification, Thomas, what you're saying, because I haven't seen a lot of presentations here, but the idea of being able to send out the presentation early to members to review and to see and get to be able to provide feedback when it's presented to us. And then another sort of pass after that information, any feedback that we have provided, another pass through just to see how it was integrated. Is this correct?
Exactly. And in a way that is time efficient and doesn't waste a lot of people's time, I feel like there's that pressure there with specifically, it's like, okay. Yeah.
Well, It seems like with the ending the epidemic stuff that I'm thinking about over the next year, I think there's two versions of what we'll want to share and get feedback. And one is the type of thing where there's like materials. It's like the type of thing I'll share with you in a minute and explain, and we can kind of talk about, it might help to talk about like the specific process for the specific thing, what would make sense and make it concrete. And then I also think there's potentially presentations from folks who are doing community engagement through the grantee process that Hannah was describing, who are doing different things and then want to come present to the group. And so they would have a presentation they put together, and that I think is a little bit different. I think those are the two modes that are really relevant to this project. Would you agree, Hannah, with that?
Yes, absolutely. For this first year, yeah.
So I guess I'm wondering if it makes sense for me to kind of share the first set of materials that I brought with me today, and then we can continue the conversation about the process for getting feedback with that as a specific example, if that might be helpful.
Yeah, Shelley, I feel like that would give us some clay basically to work with.
Okay.
Around versus okay. This ethereal clay.
I can make you co-host so that you can screen share.
That would be excellent. Thanks, David. While that's happening, I'll just say kind of as an overview that most of you know that what we ended up developing through the Ending the Epidemics process last year is like this 100-page, fairly dense, I think quite wonderful document that probably like 8 people total will ever read, right? And so with the best of intentions, there are a lot of people who are really interested in this, but just will never get through a 100-page document. And when we first set out to write this whole plan, the idea was we wanted to do something like really brief and really accessible so that it would be widely read and widely kind of become this common tool that everybody had. But as we were working on it, it just became clear very early that trying to develop a plan that has enough detail to kind of have teeth and be hold people accountable in some way, because it has enough oomph behind it and covers HIV and Hep C and STIs over a 5-year period in a city like San Francisco, that you just can't do that in 20 pages. It's just not possible. And so the strategy that we shifted was basically to say, okay, we'll just make the plan however long it needs to be comprehensive, to have everything. And however, you know, it started as 60 pages, and by the time we were done, I think it's 92. But we know that's not very accessible. It'll be more like a reference document. And then we'll create a whole series of tools to actually disseminate the information in this plan in a much more accessible way. And so that's basically where we are now, is we're trying to start putting together those tools that are meant for the average person who's not going to get through 100 pages to actually digest the material. And so we've got 3 things that we're developing. One is a kind of 15-ish page summary, like high level overview of the key content in the plan that's graphically designed. That's what I have today to share with you in a draft form. And we definitely want to get your detailed feedback on that before we finalize it and start putting it out there as sort of the publicly, you know, the audience is sort of general public, but I think it's really like community providers, stakeholders, people who really want the full picture of what the plan is and care about the details, but won't read 100 pages. That's the idea. We're also putting together a slide deck, like a PowerPoint slide deck that's got a lot of graphics and kind of some content that's really meant to go out to providers or whoever wants to use it, where they can adapt. They can kind of delete whatever they're not interested in and modify as needed, translate if desired, and then use that as a kind of basis for them to be able to present to others what has happened or what the plan is. And then the third piece is working closely with the community engagement grantees that Hannah described as kind of the primary groups, and then get a lot of general feedback on creating a series of community focused materials that are really like much simpler, really tailored for the very folks that we worked so hard to reach out to and get new voices and new perspectives when we developed the plan, we want to make sure that those kind of priority populations that are really the focus of a lot of the interventions in the plan have something that's really designed to share back to them. You gave all of this feedback, we got all of this input, here's what we're going to do. And so we'll be working on figuring out, you know, it could be everything from info sheets to comic book style, pamphlets, like zines to, you know, it could be anything. And we're really looking to work with the community, community folks throughout the city to really figure out like what's the right format, what's the right content that's really gonna speak to folks in and sort of tailor those to the different priority communities. So that's coming, we're not there yet, but we're kind of like, that's the next big thing. But what we have now is the 15-page kind of overarching summary that's meant for everyone. And I'm not going through this in detail now where I'm expecting actual feedback right now, but just giving you kind of a taste. And then we'll send this out and we'd love to just spend the time talking about the process by which we can actually get the detailed feedback. So this is the first kind of the first cut here. It's got a lot of the same pieces as the plan itself, but instead of 92 pages, it's 17, including like acknowledgements, right? And with a lot of pictures. And so it kind of gives the overview. And then talks about the different community engagement mechanisms that already existed. Of course, HCPC right here. And then the new voices, these are the groups that were where there was community funding to do outreach, and then quotes that we got from those community processes are in here. And then there's Epi Profile. You've probably seen this. This is the infographic we developed to kind of give some snapshots of the different diseases covered, a little more detail there. And then some of the cross-cutting themes of the document, things we're really working on focusing on addressing in the plan. And then the summary of activities, this is lifted right more or less right from the plan right now with each of those pillars. And then what the 24 interventions activities are at the end with a little bit of detail. And again, people who are really interested in like, well, what does that mean that you're gonna improve options for harm reduction in substance use settings? I'm not really sure how you would make that work. Then there's that whole detailed plan with a lot more information that people could go to. And then there's a final page, just a quick workforce development and acknowledgements. So anyway, that's the kind of where we stand now. And it's definitely a first draft. And we definitely would love to get thoughtful feedback from everything from like, is this the right content? Is it worded the right way? Does it feel interesting and intelligible? But also all of the pictures in there right now, all the images are like stock footage that's watermarked. And we can use that footage, you know, we would purchase it and use it legitimately, but we also would love to replace that with local, you know, pictures of real people and all different things. And so we're definitely interested in specific suggestions for like, instead of this stock photo, I really think you should use this photo that we have for you. And so we want to kind of get any ideas and kind of images submitted that would be useful for that. So that's item one for our wanting to get feedback from this group and the larger council, you know, whatever you all think makes sense. And we'd love to know what process you think works to give us that feedback. David, I saw your hand.
I have a question. So yeah, so the document that you just sent, screen shared, I would love to be able to see that, be able to sort of peruse that mm-hmm. in greater depth, if you could send that to us, if that's possible, if it's still too early in your development stage. I also understand what that's like. I do wonder who is the target audience for this document?
Yeah, I think the target audience is community providers and other sort of stakeholders. It's not intended to be written at like a third grade level or whatever the standard is. You know, it's not super, super basic, But it's meant to be like very easy to understand. You don't have to be like an academic or someone who deals with data all the time or any of that to, or speaks fluent health department bureaucratic language to be able to read it. It's sort of, it's hard to define because I don't think community providers quite captures it, but I also don't think general public is quite right either. You know, it's not meant for like everyone in San Francisco to be able to understand necessarily, but it's kind of meant to be a much broader audience.
So from a sort of structural perspective, I mean, a lot of community engagement is and you sort of described the process, it's circular, right? It's a cycle. It's your laying out your sort of initial planning process, which I assume is what this is, sending it out to mostly what we're here, it sounds like, is people who are already part of the continuum of care, as it were, and who are somewhat informed in the ways in which those things are interconnected and affect each other and consumers of services. And then at some point you're going to, and maybe not you, but the service providers that were contracted to do community engagement are going to do community engagement, both towards educating community, but also accessing quantitative information from them to greater inform how the process goes, and then the cycle begins again. Is that sort of what I'm hearing?
Right. I mean, that structure that you just described basically does exist. It was Hannah has really been leading, kind of working with all of these providers to put together, and it's just starting. So it exists, but it's like in its infancy, to create these kind of feedback loops and opportunities to get a lot of feedback. So to both share information and gather feedback and information from folks in the community, that's the plan. What my role is, or Facenti Consulting's role, is to kind of tap into those resources from that structure and create specifically community facing summaries of this 100-page plan in a way that kind of we can feed into the system and get the information out about what this plan is that San Francisco is planning to use.
So largely sort of outward facing informational pieces
from my vantage point. There are definitely people yes. who are involved much more in the kind of constant feedback loops, though.
For sure. I sort of asked this question because the mandate of this particular committee is, and it was pointed out to me, is not so much about sort of what the presentations are that go to the rest of the larger council. It is how we enact our own community engagement efforts. And so like HCAP is a good example of that. And how we can potentially engage and dovetail with other people's efforts. So the reason I think for this has interest for this particular committee is because we are interested in not necessarily the information that you're presenting to the larger council or people outside of this committee, which is a different committee's job essentially, but how we can help. And maybe what from our perspective would be the information we'd like to see from you, or sort of how that sort of works in conjunction with what we're doing community engagement wise, more specifically, I guess is, so it's sort of a little bit of a challenging thing there, but I know I'm drawing kind of a fine line between what was said earlier, what Thomas said earlier, and what I'm asking now, but they are sort of different mandates committee-wise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I understand. Thomas, I see your hand up.
Yeah, no worries. I just wanted to make sure we were, any follow-up on that item before we pivot a little bit? I had two thoughts. So I feel as if one is I just want to make sure that the collateral produced is
screen, for lack of a better word, but also just can be shared with members to put on their Facebook pages or something along those lines. So I don't know what that terminology is, but I feel as if trying to move away from paper as much as possible, and then also be able to share with members images and things along those lines that they can put on their own social media, I think would be really helpful, because this body is basically our distribution wave. And how do folks feel about making sure that is within this process? Any opposition? Eric, you're shaking your head. That's helpful. And then the other thing was just basically from the process standpoint of, it sounds like you're basically asking, part of me is just thinking it'd be nice to have whatever's going to be, you need our feedback on a week prior to this meeting or a week prior to us needing to discuss it in a public setting, then reviewing it in this meeting, and then a certain time frame for you getting any feedback, and then a final cutoff date, right? I feel like that's the question, right? What's the process that we want to have in place for feedback to be provided to whatever's generated? Is that right?
Wait, yeah. Sorry, I'm interpreting it as something entirely different. So tell me if I'm wrong.
Maybe I'm wrong, Ben, so that's why I'm asking.
Wait, okay, my interpretation is Hannah and Shelley are asking us how to engage communities in providing feedback on the documents or the materials. And then Thomas, you're thinking of giving feedback for us as a council only. Is that the difference between you and I? Okay.
And which one are you asking, Shelley? I'm flexible.
That's a great question. I think it's both. I think that it's, when it comes to this particular document that I just showed you, I think we would love to get the council's feedback in whatever form makes sense to make sure that what we release, I mean, we keep talking throughout the ETE process, we keep talking about the community engagement grantees, like the folks who are doing the community engagement, because there's like these specific contracts set up to do that. But we've been clear all along that, you know, the whole point of HCPC is community engagement. Like, we see you as kind of the core of that in so many ways. So I guess part of our effort in coming to talk to you all is like, we want the community feedback from what you all represent, from community, you know, the communities you represent and what the council does. We see you as a very key stakeholder to say, yes, this plan that's going to go out to community providers, this summary looks really great, or like, please don't have that picture, or this part's really confusing. Whatever detail it is, we'd love that from some version of the council. So there's that. And then I think in a broader way, going back more to what Hannah presented, there's going to be this ongoing effort over many, many years, really, to continuously be engaging community in like, how are we doing in implementing this plan? What's going well? What do we need feedback on? What do we need to change? And so we would love to have your input as a counselor, as this committee, on sort of what's the best way to supplement the things that are going on that Hannah just described with those organizations to get a more broad effort of getting the community feedback throughout the whole ETE process.
So again, so I think that the first half of what you just said is largely the purview of the Council Affairs Committee, sort of what information we're asking from you, what you can do for us informationally is Council Affairs. What we can do for you as far as informing your process and also how that might interact with the things that we are doing and how we also, the thing, another element of what this committee is mandated to do is to maintain some sort of liaison and interaction with other bodies, like Getting to Zero and so forth. And so one is sort of like, what can you do for us? And the other one is, what can we do for you? And this committee is essentially, what can we do for you? And so that, I guess, is in a lot of ways is my question, is how can we specifically help you in shaping this process? How can we help, and how can our sort of goals, coincide?
Yeah, and I would add that when you're asking that, you want to be very specific about what you're asking for, right? So we can help you specifically with what your request is. Because if it comes too broad or too general, it's just going to be, I can imagine it'll be just be too confusing.
Mm-hmm. Hannah, I'm going to pass this one back to you because I actually think this is in your realm much more than mine.
Yeah, no, this is helpful. So if I understand correctly, it's both liaisoning with other you said bodies like getting to zero, et cetera, and then also through your community engagement activities, it's more broadly. Is that what I'm understanding? Because you have your own annual community engagement activities, correct? Yeah. So then to be provide specific requests, it would be helpful just to know in the past what that may have looked like or what you're able to do. So we have these materials that Facenti Consulting are developing that we want community members input on. So I guess one request then would be, could that fit into the activities that this committee does already or that you may be doing this year, getting feedback on concrete materials. But then the other big piece is the implementation of the services themselves. So how do your engagement activities provide feedback on what DPH is funding, for example, to make sure that it's the right services in the right locations, et cetera. So is that a different committee? Is that the council? And I guess I should have read up on this prior to this meeting.
I think that there's definitely functions within this committee that can align with those exercises. So the COLAs or the needs assessments, like mm-hmm. those types of functions yeah. can be used to we could include domains or question like items in the questionnaires that get at trying to assess the current system based on what has been funded for this mm-hmm. initiative. That's one thing. I was writing in the chat that I think I'm trying to discern what value we bring to the table in terms of our networks when I compare us to another network like Getting to Zero or Happen or something. And so if anybody else thinks of what we're valuable or what value we bring to the network table, I think that's also something that we could leverage. Top of my head was just like, I don't know, just because we're HHS connected a little bit more than others, maybe there's something that we could do in leveraging our relationship through Kevin and Beth, like with the providers that are funded in different service categories. Maybe there's something that we can leverage there in terms of getting engagement in the long term for implementation. I see David, and then unfortunately, I think we are at time for this agenda item. Dave?
Yeah, I'll try and keep it really brief. And maybe Stephen has to say something quickly, or maybe he can add it to his next thing on the agenda. But as far as sort of how those things interact, and in very informal ways, when we have had new funding and or changes to the system of care come online, in the needs assessment and the COLAs, which are our two sort of primary community outreach formats, which do largely consist of focus groups and or interviews, individual interviews, we do often sort of question and attempt to provide some information when available around things that are coming online, such as when PrEP, became a thing that was available, but it was, not necessarily widespread. That was actually a big part of our conversations with people is, are you accessing PrEP or do you know what is happening with PrEP or do you have a partner who is accessing PrEP or things along those lines? Additionally, when we were focusing on housing, we did question people quite a bit about things like the Dahlia resource and whether people were accessing or we even had an awareness. When ACA was coming online, there was, we did a lot of questioning and attempting to sort of steer people towards information around, you know, even before it was ACA, I don't remember what, there was another acronym. I'm sure Kevin can remember what the acronym was, but, you know, sort of getting a sense of like, were people being guided in the right direction? Did they have the resources they needed to navigate the benefits environment that was changing rapidly around them, situations like that? So that is one of the things that we can do, similar to what Ben just said. And I think with Stephen and HCAP, we have a huge resource in sort of, because he's often dealing with people who have significant challenges. And, you know, we can sort of leverage that to both provide information and get feedback from the community.
Stephen, did you want to share your comment?
I mean, I'm happy to tack on to that. I was obviously thinking about how I could support in any of this, and how, you know, it's hard for me to envision exactly how everything is pieced together, because it is kind of a large system, and there's a lot with a lot of stakeholders, you know. But to me, when I saw that document, it's what I heard from the folks at Facente was that they were looking for feedback on that document. My understanding, you know, of that document is that it is supposed to provide some sort of roadmap for the community partners who are responsible for enacting this plan, and also, you know, who are also going to be responsible for communicating that to the clients who need the support. If I'm understanding that correctly, then, you know, certainly looping in the service categories, I think, is a really good idea. And I'm happy to support in that way, either by providing some lay of the land or trying to dissect the how different service categories might serve the ultimate plan. I'm talking about something I think less than accountability, but more than theoretical, like, oh, this is what the plan is. And so, you know, having names and phone numbers and things like that, like, who are we going to call if we have a question about how to hit action point number one on your thing? I think all of those things would be really critical for the community to be engaged, because otherwise it's just kind of pie in the sky. That's what I'll tag onto it. And I don't know how I can support, but anything that I can do to support, obviously I will make myself available.
Thanks, Stephen. I have a comment from Beth, and then also a comment from Mark. Beth, did you want to share what you typed in?
Sure, just that a lot of the brainstorming, like the selection of the target population for each of the community engagement listening activities, that starts here in this group, and that's all formalized and selected, and the initial brainstorming around the focus group topics and questions happens here, and like which agencies to coordinate with. But I think every single time for one of the major listening activities, a separate work group forms where people with like particular expertise, either as a service provider or past experience or direct experience in the population, sort of like forms, and a smaller set of people work together on a lot of the details. And I don't know if you have some of those things going on in other parts of your project with some of the people you've contracted with, but it may be that somebody who's been part of some of those work groups has a lot of information that they could share with some people who are newer at the at those activities. Maybe the ones you've contracted with are not new at those things. But there's a lot of experience on that detailed level work, but very little of that happens in the wider group, partly because it just takes a lot of time and concentration.
Thanks, Beth. Mark?
Hi, I don't know if you saw my chat question, Hannah, so I'll just mention it here. It was regarding council affairs. So I'm wondering, since council affairs is next Tuesday, I guess two questions. First of all, do you have a presentation that you'd like council affairs to review at that meeting? I can certainly put you on the agenda. That has yet to be created. And second, part of council affairs purview, it doesn't really do it that often, is actually to look at the standards and best practices of different service categories. It is a committee that is empowered to engage with the service continuum, and with different areas of DPH and government. So the conversation could also happen there. A small group is great, of course, but that is part of Council Affairs' mission, really, is to really provide that I wouldn't say oversight, but just partner to how the continuum of care actually works. Your thoughts?
I appreciate that, Mark. I realize I'm mixing my meetings and missions of the meetings. So I think figured that out, and I think everyone else was on board about 20 minutes ago.
We were too shy of correcting you, Thomas.
Wait, I thought I did already.
This is not a shy bunch, by the way. So that's not going to fly, Mark.
Ben tried, but he had too soft of a touch. Hannah, maybe you and I can just take that offline and see if you have any interest in bringing that conversation to next week's meeting.
Sounds great. Thank you, Mark. Yeah, right. I'll send you an email.
Sounds good.
Thanks.
Hannah and Shelley, I hope this was all very helpful feedback. I anticipate that this is the first of many conversations moving forward, I assume.
Are we going to move to a membership vote now? Nobody laughed.
Wait, we have to vote? What are we voting on? Wait, are you kidding?
I am kidding.
Okay.
Ben, the joke was that he was now confusing this committee with members.
Okay.
With humor.
Come on.
All right. Are there any last comments or feedback for Shelley and Hannah before we move to the next agenda item?
Thanks, everyone.
Yeah, thank you so much. This is really helpful.
Thanks, Shelley and Hannah. Appreciate it always.
Okay. Thanks. All right. Thanks. Bye.
All right. Well, I will pass it to Stephen for an HCAP report.
Thanks. Well, it is very good to see you all, but it has been a very long time and many HCAP reports ago. I think the one that I had, I don't know if somebody has it up on their screen, but or is going to share, but the one that was sent out for this most recent meeting was the one for January. A lot of the cases are kind of rolled over. If you all understand the HCAP report, really is just a snapshot in time of where I'm at and the cases that I have ongoing. When I reviewed this most recent report, it kind of touched on a lot of the issues that that I think are most indicative of what I've been seeing. Some of them are COVID related, others are not. As I do normally, I'll kind of share the two that I think are the most ubiquitous and kind of the most easiest attacked, by this committee and by the Planning Council. The first, I think, one thing that pops up that a lot of people might not, know of, or, you know, if you haven't been using UCSF or whatever, is my chart. And this is an issue that kind of affects, I think, some of the most vulnerable of our population. But, basically, I've had several clients contact me having received either after visit reports or prescriptions or basically notes on their in their medical records with names or information that they're not familiar with, appointments that had been made without them knowing. So, for example, there was one client, and I'm not entirely sure. There is on this report. I think it should be under closed cases. So there it is. After visit report. Sorry, 2051. I'm gonna look at my own document so I can give you the right. Sorry, 2020-04 on page 2. So this is a one example, right, where a client was living in a supportive housing facility, and the client, the supportive housing facility has been following COVID protocols and had been trying to test everybody, and what they were using to do that was the Epic system that was rolled out by the DPH, and Epic is amazing, it's helpful, but you know, it touches, just like we are all very familiar, well, service providers are very familiar with reporting, and oftentimes you're putting in information after the fact, or, you know, in my instance, you're having a law clerk input information that doesn't necessarily show up to the client. But in the case of a medical record, it does show up, and everybody that touches that record is kind of accounted for, presumably. That would be a good thing if you're looking for accountability. But what happens with a lot of our most vulnerable clients who are suffering from some mental illness or they're in crisis, they see unfamiliar names or unfamiliar information on these reports, and it sends them. Oftentimes I'm encountering clients when they're already elevated or when they have another issue going on, and this either compounds it or it adds a whole other dimension to, you know, whatever paranoia or whatever they're experiencing. So I've had to, on a couple of occasions, engage with service providers to talk about and check in with them about how the information is being put in, so that I can clarify for clients ahead of time, you know, or clarify with clients why was this person with a different name on your record? Why was there an appointment made that you weren't, or a date that was made, and oftentimes there's a very reasonable explanation, but it happens, once it happens after the rupture, it becomes very difficult to fix. And so what I'm suggesting to service providers is to talk more with some of their clients about how that system works and why they might, you know, prompt them to let people know, you know, hey, you might see something, you might see that there's an appointment pop up on your after, don't worry about it. If you see something that's really concerning, give me a call, but our system, this is how it works. A little bit of disclaimer is something that really goes a long way with a lot of the clients, and being transparent with how the process works can preempt a lot of the trauma that the clients are experiencing, which is in some instances trauma that they've experienced at the hands of service providers before. And so that re-traumatization is kind of the thing that I have been dealing with in a lot of these instances. And so that has been kind of a major thing. The other thing is that, you know, a lot of the supportive housing facilities have had to make some pretty drastic changes to how they're delivering, services. And it has, you know, really thrown clients for a loop. If you'll remember back to last year, those of you who were on the committee or on the planning council at that time, I reported a number of housing services issues, and those were mostly geared around interpersonal dynamics within the facility, a lot of neighbor disputes or, roommate disputes, things like that, that were occurring. This time it's a little bit different because it's coming from the conflict is kind of stemming from the clients having these really, you know, at a very scary time, a lot of really, you know, big changes. You know, they're shutting down facilities that they've been used to using. They're changing how they can get access to food within the building. Like, all of these things are occurring and making some major changes for clients who are not so comfortable with change. And so that's been posing a lot of challenges for clients. I've been supporting them through it by referring them to mental health support, referring them to psychosocial support, which, as you know, it has a big challenge with delivering services right now. We're still in COVID world with regard to, you know, the HCAP, with regard to the HCAP cases for the most part. I guess with that, as per the usual, I'll open it up to any questions about specific instances or anything anybody wants to talk to me about.
Stephen, are some of the, it sounds like you were sort of alluding to this, but some of the challenges are just with the move from sort of in-person to virtual service provision?
So it's been a problem not only for, for the service providers to deliver in that way, but a lot of our clients have had trouble accessing the services, or they don't feel effective, or they are intimidated by them. Are you asking me about the allusion to psychosocial support, or are you asking about the AVS, like the, can you clarify your question? I'm sorry.
Yeah. I was mainly asking more generally, cause that seemed to be the gist of what you were saying. I don't know. I mean, specifically as as a psychosocial support provider, I'd be happy to take any challenges offline with you, but.
Oh yeah, no, nothing. There's nothing. There was nothing outstanding with regard to that. I thought so. The change to Epic was something that happened, you know, within the system, you know, last year, and I think it happened. You know, it was prior to COVID. That was in the plan prior to COVID. So that is unrelated. The challenges that are occurring, right, are probably exacerbated because of whatever people are experiencing right now. Mm-hmm. But yes, I suppose that does boil down to kind of a discomfort around technology or, you know, in general, which is, you know, I'm foreseeing is going to be a major concern for us moving forward. I'm seeing that happen. You know, clients just becoming disconnected and I've had some sad cases with clients who, you know, I had one client tell me, what do you even do when you don't get, he had a computer, the computer broke, he bought a new computer, the computer came, what did they do? They emailed him a receipt, his phone got shut off, and then the computer broke. So no phone, no computer, can't call anybody, can't get a phone number, right? Like, how do it's incredibly, and there's not, that I know of, I don't know that there is a, you know, there's one service provider that is, you know, that I know of, I don't know that they're within the HIV system of care, but there's one service provider in the city that I know that has some technical support available, but the public library, but nobody's meeting in person. And for somebody that needs that level of support, you need somebody to go to the, go to the space. And, you know, I mean, that's a really sad thing. And, you know, this is a client that was feeling isolated even before COVID. I foresee that becoming a bigger issue separate and apart from the COVID pandemic. But, no, I think, you know, if I'm answering your question, these are more related to change and re-traumatization. The issues that I raised are more related to some really uncomfortable change without enough support is what my sense is.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Any other questions for Stephen?
Stephen, thanks for that. I feel like in some ways, though, this is just also a symptom just of a stressed system.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. And, you know, I mean, everybody up the chain. And that's one of, a common conversation that I have with my clients is, everybody is in this, and you know, they'll have a problem and they'll pin it on something, right? They'll pin it on a person or right. And I'll say, you know what, that very well may be true. And that's legitimate. And if you're feeling that way, I have no reason to disbelieve it, but let me share this. Okay. Think about this. You don't know what's going on in that person's life. That person could have a father at home that's sick right now, or somebody in the hospital right now that they can't visit. Right. And sharing those things with clients, you know, a lot of our clients have been isolated for a really long time. They're not going through that, and providing that perspective is helpful for them. It has turned around a lot of conversations on my end. I've mediated a lot of issues just merely by having a conversation with folks about empathy. And you know, if there's anything that my clients can do, it's empathize. You know, I mean, they've been through so much. And so, I think, you know, it absolutely is a system of, you know, it's a rough time. People are struggling.
Well, and I was actually thinking prior to COVID, it was a stress system just with our reductions, not really our reductions, our levelness, which ends up actually being a reduction. So I am almost a little bit nervous to push out to providers to the message of be more empathetic just because of that acknowledging it's like, So
to be fair, I think the HIV service providers are doing an amazing job. And, you know, I've, those issues with, technical stuff, but our clients encounter a lot of circumstances with folks, especially in there, and, you can see in the graph, they encounter a lot of issues in supportive housing environments that HHS doesn't touch. And I think a lot of that has been coming to a head in recent months.
Yeah, fair enough. I agree 100%. So thank you for the information. And it's helpful for us to kind of wrap our minds around how do we support a system that's becoming more and more stressed, and making sure that we're all visible of that stress, if, for lack of a better word, if we're not actually living it, which most of us are. But at the same time, as a community, how do we respond to it? So,
yeah.
Is that the right response in the right meeting? Feel like I've lost my confidence in speaking.
I think you're back on track, Thomas, now.
Well, I do have 4:10 on the clock. Wondering if there's any last comments for Stephen before I pass it over to Dave. All right, thank you so much, Stephen.
Thank you, I'm gonna have to take off. Thank you all.
All right, let's pass it to, I'm assuming it's Dave or Melina, on COLA / needs assessments.
I can begin this conversation. So this is the time of year where we start selecting our new targets, target populations. If you are curious, I can pull up, I can share a screen showing you what populations we've worked on in the recent past. But before I do that, I might just ask if people are, I think most of you were in this committee last year, maybe some of you were not. I think Derek was not here yet. He was maybe not a member yet when we had this conversation last year. But you'll probably remember that we chose a target population, which was Latinx, and then modified it because of COVID. Before we get into much of a debate beyond that, I was curious, do you guys just want to shift back to Latinx? Are we concerned the same reasons we didn't want to focus on last year could be an issue this year, which I think signs say potentially yes, although maybe by late summer, early fall, things may have shifted to more stable situation. What do we think about that? Just opening it up to the committee.
Is it against our charge or against our policy to postpone? Like, what if we just postponed a quarter?
I mean, we can start the process at any time. As you know, last year, I didn't start the process until much later than usual because of COVID, which is why we didn't receive the presentation until last month. Ordinarily, you would have gotten your presentation on that in September, October latest. So we could push the conversation out a little bit until we have a little more clarity. We can focus on a target and modify our expectations as things go. From my perspective, it might be helpful to sort of settle on something specifically, because what we tend to do is pick our needs assessment target and then use that as sort of a jumping off point to have that COLA discussion. It might be helpful to think in those terms so we could at least get the ball rolling from an outreach standpoint, if not outreach and participants, but outreach and sort of stakeholders and collaborators.
Where are we focusing right now? Transitional age youth? Is that what we decided back then? And you
So yeah, that was the focus for last year, and we that's complete, and the full council received that presentation just a couple weeks ago at this point. Although I am still hoping to get provider follow up on that that will go onto the website. Looks like Lee has a question.
Yeah, if I remember correctly, like you said, wasn't Next the runner up last year?
Wasn't what the runner up last year?
Was Let Next the runner up last year? What was the runner up?
Youth was the runner up in some ways. So Latinx was the target we settled on. And then we came back and had a later conversation after we had not met for a while as a committee. And when we began to meet again post-COVID on Zoom, our first meeting was to determine whether we wanted to continue with Latinx or not. And it was decided that we would maybe push Latinx until this year and focus on a smaller population that we could more easily access potentially. Mm-hmm. Because we are sort of forced to do things via Zoom where we knew we were going to be forced to do things via Zoom. The added potential of language capacity became a further issue. Clearly, I'm not, we all understand all the challenges that are involved here. So ordinarily we would do two to three COLAs and one needs assessment. Last year we did one COLA and one needs assessment, which had very limited response. So that was my question: is do we want to go back and focus on Latinx, knowing that we might have some of the same challenges, but sort of hoping that at some point this year we may be able to sort of set up maybe some in-person distance focus groups or something along those lines. We've also learned a lot. Like a lot of the things that I really struggled with last year and was concerned about how I was going to even proceed, I've sorted out on my end. So I feel more confident in approaching a larger target this year, but it is still up to you guys.
Yeah, well, that's really good. And that would be really helpful because I would want to definitely have your input on any decision or kind of group that we come up with, because I mean, it seems like the challenges really are great right now. And I was just reflecting on Stephen's last comment about the challenges he's having working with, the clients that are coming to him. I'm wondering if it might be a good idea just to push this out just a little bit more until we get a better, clearer picture on what's happening with the pandemic here in San Francisco.
Okay. We have Derek and then TJ.
Well, I think TJ had his hands up before me, but...
Then TJ, then Derek.
Go ahead, Derek. It's okay. Thank you.
Okay. I just wanted to get a little bit of clarification, and that is the last time I heard the discussion about the transitional youth concern, it was that the needs assessment was heavily impacted by, one, the sort of difficulty in reaching the population, but also the coronavirus as well, and there was a lot of concerns about, is this does this even qualify as a full-on needs assessment? And I can't help but to reflect that at some point, even if it's not the next one that is done, that we quickly return to the transitional youth and make an assessment of them that feels a bit more meatier. Or was there, in the end, was there a feeling like, no, this is good enough, and it's that sort of thing?
So I'll respond to that question before we have TJ weigh in. So two things. I think that it is smaller than it would have been under better circumstances. That said, and this is sort of backed up by Jack Bowman and other people who work with youth population, is that youth as youth as a group is a relatively small number in the overall epidemic. They are generally much harder to access. They are more challenging to access in the ways that we ordinarily would because of the way they are utilizing the system of care, which is significantly different than many of the other HIV positive subpopulations that we engage with. Interestingly enough, if you look at the total numbers, even the six people that we interviewed was not statistically insignificant given the very low numbers of youth that are accessing services under Ryan White Part A. That said, I think it is potentially good enough for right now, especially since at any opportunity, we do engage youth when they are part of a larger group that has an intersection with the people that we're accessing. So when we have done needs assessments on people, mental health challenges or homelessness or substance use, so forth, we have always sought out youth service providers to get youth voice in that. So it is not as though we don't hear from youth if we aren't specifically focusing on them. So in this case, we would be making efforts to access a youth perspective on any, if we focus on Latinx, we would hope to engage with Latinx youth. I hope that answers your question.
It does, and just one additional thing, I think, and you were kind of touching upon it, Dave, and it goes a little bit to what Lee was saying earlier, given the impacts, the severe impacts that COVID-19 has been on delivery of services and this sort of thing, I kind of think it'd be kind of interesting to do a sort of assessment or a needs assessment on exactly that, like how do we, how is the team adjusting to and using the methodologies and reaching the populations that needs to be reached at? Does that make sense?
Not exactly sure what you're suggesting.
Looking at the effectiveness of the tools, like these are the most effective ways of in these sort of different times where we used to go out and just like gather a group of folks, like these are the sort of tools that we're working on developing and we're finding these things most effective. It almost calls for an assessment of the tools and strategies sure. that you're using to engage people. I don't know if that'll be, for me, there's something in my head that kind of goes like, there's something in hearing that sort of information.
Derek, would you say that you are, and I wanna know, I'm looking for clarification. Are you saying that you wanna know how the system of care is being impacted by the pandemic for clients?
Impacted and addressing that impact, yes.
So, I mean, that is, that is an interesting idea. So the first thing that you were, so I want to get back to that in just one second. The first thing that you were sort of talking about is methodology and assessing methodology. And ideally, the group, every year we do a needs assessment, does that process of reassessing, and redefining and fine-tuning, and sometimes reinventing, as the case may be in the last couple of years, or as the last year and probably this upcoming year, what our methodology is. So that's baked into the cake. That's part of the process. So that concern, to that I would say we're on it. The other piece, Lee's question about, the sort of larger, like, you know, do we want to focus on how COVID is affecting the system of care as a needs assessment is a completely different question. Before I get to that, I'd like to hear what TJ has to say, because he's been waiting.
Thanks, Dave. Yeah, you know, I want to agree with Dave on one thing that he mentioned. I think that we should really try to pick a population or a topic in today's meeting. If we delay it, it's 30 days that Dave and whoever else works with him on this have less time to do outreach, figure out workarounds and whatever. And then sort of, I'm kind of a little bit like with Derek, I'm wondering if this is a time to go to more of a topic that an overlying topic that goes across all populations, which is the impact of lack of mental health during the epidemic. And if there's some way we could do that, because the lingering effects of this is going to happen. You know, if we open up in September and everything's back to normal, people are still going to be dealing with the effects of this for years to come. And I think it would be great if we had a better picture of how big the problem is. And then that may help us advocate for ways to get more money around mental health or change our prioritization or something. And also, I just with the point about trying to pick a topic today, I really like getting, usually Dave gets everything to us prior to the summit. And so I really like having that information when we go to the summit, if it's possible.
Wanted to note that there are 5 minutes left in this meeting. It did sound like Dave was already aware that we might need to spread this dialogue over 2 meetings. So my recommendation moving forward would be that perhaps we have this as a first agenda item or one of the first business items in the next meeting, but we do have it recorded what has been recommended so far. Maybe we could start there at the next meeting, like last meeting, this is where we ended up with these recommendations, and let's start from here. How does that sound, Dave?
Can I ask a quick question? I see Mark's got a hand too. So okay. Mark, your hand was up before my question came to me.
Mark?
Go ahead, either of you.
Just to, I guess, briefly, just to address a couple things that have come up. It would probably be a disservice to the council and to the whole needs assessment process to actually assess the needs of the same population 2 times across back-to-back years during the same pandemic. So I really think that the idea of having youth as the target is one that I would actually have a lot of challenge with, in particular in trying to explain that to our HRSA program manager. The second thing is that a needs assessment target does need to be an actual target. So assessing the how folks are engaging with our own needs assessments would not be an appropriate a target, but I think Dave pretty much explained how that is baked in the cake. However, a more general needs assessment that's pretty much like how are folks dealing with the mental health challenges that may include this time of isolation during this pandemic, that certainly could be a target. We actually have had a target in the past of folks who have been diagnosed with mental health. I just want us to be sort of on target about what our targets probably should be as far as our mandate goes.
Thomas?
Yeah, I just want to, so Ben, with you, let's pick this conversation up. Part of me is just thinking, just for that future conversation, I have 2 thoughts. One is just mental health. Like, I don't know if we've actually looked at mental health as a group before, yeah. And if that's a possibility, and the concept of COVID within that. So I really am curious how people are doing with COVID and isolation, and or is there even a group of people who have HIV and got COVID, or what that is? But I do feel like I have general concern about isolation issues and mental health, either of people actually affected or impacted by COVID. So should we put that in the hopper when we get back together as a group to...
So quickly, if I can comment on that. So yes, we did mental health relatively recently. Though we live in a very different world than we did at that point. So I think that that's a valid thing, although I think that it should be sort of in combination with something larger or shifted that sort of acknowledges the very significant change in the world from then and now. I am interested in that idea of sort of the intersection. We generally don't do system-wide needs assessments. We do tend to focus on subgroups with the intention of comparing and contrasting them. And that I think is provides us with the best and most useful information to actually put a sort of critical eye to the system of care. But if we really want to look at system-wide, comprehensively, how people are affected, that does make things easier on me on a sort of recruitment standpoint. Having to do sort of distance recruitment, I feel like we maybe I'm already sort of thinking of some ideas about how we go about that. But I agree. Let's do on this and maybe take some a more extended period of time to talk about it next month. In the meantime, I might actually start putting some thought into what that process looks like. So
thanks, Jordan, or thanks, Dave. Mm-hmm. And thanks everybody for hanging in for our longer meeting today. We usually end early, don't we?
I think Mark's got a hand before we jump off.
I just want to add one thing is just food for thought for next month's meeting. Because we're still in this pandemic, if you go broad, that actually could be very helpful to the needs assessment. The more targeted you're going to get, the more challenging. So something broad might be something that this committee should consider. Just want to put that out there.
Thanks, Mark.
Sorry, it looks like TJ might also have a, is that from your old hand or is that a new one?
No, it was a new one, but it seems like everyone wants to go. I just feel like we have 30 more minutes we could meet and talk things through. And then if we couldn't.
TJ, you're asking to meet for 30 more minutes? Is that what you just said?
Yeah, I mean, I have the time blocked out for this meeting always on my calendar, so.
I see that.
The meeting is actually scheduled for an hour and a half because of in COVID world we've had a little bit less to do and seems like people are exhausted by Zoom meetings. But that's why I suggested at the beginning we might want to extend it. But it feels like maybe people want to push and continue the conversation next time. I am at your service.
If you're going to extend a meeting beyond the actual agenda that was publicly noticed, you're going to actually have to take a straw poll of all the members, and we'll see how that works out.
TJ, are you?
It's fine. It seems like everyone wants to go, so that's okay.